You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. If you gamble, use your game sense. Visit GameSenseAB.ca to find out more. Colin, it's interesting in regards to, like, when you watch, well, any race car, to be honest, F1, IndyCar, NASCAR, and people are like, well, you know, I'm a pretty good driver. How could you describe, like, driving, like, and is F1 and IndyCar infinitely harder than driving NASCAR?
Oh, yeah, physically, for sure. Like, without question, there is no comparison. Not saying that NASCAR drivers aren't good at what they do, but their skills are not really physically in nature the same way that that open-wheel guys are. You know, the G-force loads, you know, can go from, you know, positive 5 G's laterally to negative 5 with a side load of, you know, 3 to, like, you know, IndyCar is more physically demanding than even an F1 car is from a steering standpoint, because they don't use power steering, but the brake application in a Formula One car is just indescribably difficult. You know, NASCAR has power brakes, power steering. You know, they don't really generate that much G load in the corners, but they're still on the edge of control. Like, it's hot in a stock car. You know, these guys can lose up to 10 pounds during a race. There's not a lot of air on the driver, so, you know, like, heat is the biggest factor that a stock car guy has to deal with. But yeah, it's interesting. There's a video that was posted. I can share it after we're done. An average guy, you know, had a slight racing background in go-karts when he was a kid, and he actually goes through Renault's, you know, not really their academy, but he actually gets in and drives an older generation Renault F1 car. And, you know, his descriptions of how hard it is to actually, you know, get your head wrapped around, you know, executing at speed is just, it's super fascinating. I'll make sure I throw it up there so people can watch it. It's like a 13-minute video of what it was like. And this is a fit guy who used to race, and, you know, he's got at least a bit of a head for, you know, for what you need to do in a race car. And he basically said, like, he was completely ill-prepared when he thought he was applying the brakes at 100%, as hard as he could actually apply the brake. In the paddock, he was only able to generate 75% braking force. And on the racetrack, he was only able to get 40% braking force. So really fascinating stuff that, you know, not to discourage people. We want more people coming out to the races. But no, you could not just get into an F1 car, a NASCAR, an Indy car, and, you know, do anything besides look like an idiot.
Yeah, you know what? I watched that video, and he kept talking about how your stomach feels like it gets left behind. What, like, why is that happening? And I kind of understand. Like, I've been on a couple rides where I felt like my stomach was maybe somewhere else. But, like, is that just because of the pure acceleration, or like, what would drive that feeling?
Yeah, it's absolutely the acceleration. Now, you know, I've been on what's deemed as the world's fastest roller coaster, at least from an acceleration standpoint, which is the Ferrari roller coaster at Abu Dhabi, at Ferrari World. And it accelerates from something like, I can't remember, it's like 0 to 100 in like 4 seconds or 3 seconds or something like that. It's crazy fast. It's really cool.
Yeah.
The F1 car will do that in just over a second. Like, the multiple is exponential. You can't, there's no set of circumstances that we can create outside of an F1 car, or even the launch of a fighter jet off of a battleship doesn't accelerate as fast. And that's with, like, rocket propelled, like, you know, jet assist takeoff. Like, the only thing that accelerates faster is a like a top fuel dragster, and they'll go from 0 to 100 miles an hour in just over a second. They'll end up pulling, I can't remember, like, in my day, they used to pull 6G. I think it's actually more than that, where they'll accelerate up to, nowadays it's like 330 miles an hour in under 4 seconds. Like, they're Eddie Hill described a top fuel dragster accelerating as sitting at a stoplight and getting hit by a Kenworth doing 100 miles an hour. That's essentially what the launch of a Top Fuel car is like. So, yeah, it looks really easy when you're on TV. It looks like, you know, when you're watching any race, like a NASCAR race, an IndyCar, an F1 race, and they show a high up shot, it doesn't look like there's a lot going on. But I mean, these guys are so busy, you know, even NASCAR guys are really busy in the cockpit making adjustments to the track bar, making adjustments to, you know, different fans to try and get this tire to cool a little bit more, or get this one a little bit hotter. It's very, very busy, not to mention the fact that you have all these other guys that are driving around you that you have to react to. So yeah, I mean, I, you know, it's really tough to appreciate unless you actually do it. But yeah, I'll like I said, I'll share that video when we're done and give people a little bit more of a taste.
Colin Livingston joins us in the Cantorque Racing Report. Unique that it's going to be three weekends in a row starting this weekend for F1. They're in Mexico, then Sao Paulo, followed by they finish up in Qatar. And you know, the first two weekends, you know, they're rested, adjusted to the time zone, but then they got to jump to Qatar, which is 14 hours of flying, as well as another 6-hour adjustment from Brazil. So that one might be a little bit more challenging. But I want to get your thoughts this week at Mexico. The altitude is the highest of the year. Does that impact how they set up a car? Like, does altitude impact tires and everything?
Tires, indirectly, but more than anything, it's going to affect the body work on the cars, because the air is so thin. Like, Mexico City is 2,250 meters, like 2.25 kilometers above sea level. You know, most of the races that F1 does are really essentially at sea level. So Mexico City is a bit of an anomaly on the calendar. The air is really thin. So to generate downforce, these guys have to run maximum downforce. They have to put big wings on the car. It's hard for the engines. We've talked about that the last couple of weeks, because there's not as much air for the engine to combust. So it makes it a little bit more difficult to make power. But it's also going to be difficult for the drivers at that altitude. And, you know, Stretti can probably talk about the difference between playing in Vancouver and then going to play in Denver. You feel that there's less air for you to breathe. So for these guys who are going to be physically exerting themselves for, you know, essentially 2 hours on Sunday, it's going to be a challenge.
What about the race, track itself? Is there some longer stretches of straightaway that, and then does that make the engine work a little harder considering the altitude?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be three DRS zones, so you know, definitely some longer straights. They'll hit on the front straightaway. They're hitting something like 325, 330 kilometers an hour when they get the DRS Jeez. Deployed. The straightaway stuff, like the straight line, isn't really hard on the engine because the car's not under that much load. It's more of the accelerating out of the corners when you've got the full weight of the car going from the slowest possible speed to, like, getting that going is what makes it harder on the engine. I don't expect to see a lot of reliability issues. Most of the front runners anyway, between Red Bull and Mercedes, have recently replaced the power unit, so they should be fine. But it's tough to tell because they don't really convey those messages from the cockpit. But if the driver's, struggling for air, like having a hard time breathing, you're not really going to see it, but you might see the driver fall off in pace. Definitely these next 2 weeks for sure are going to be great for us, because they kind of happen at, more human times where we'll be able to watch these races during the middle of the day. So hopefully we get a few more eyes on the TV. Mexico is a fun race though, because the final section of the racetrack actually runs through a baseball stadium that they essentially deconstruct. They take sections of the stadium out. There's this really cool grandstand effect, almost like Hockenheim, but really unique on the calendar, that the ambiance is really cool. And, usually the celebrations happen back on the front straightaway, but they actually move back to the stadium section and, have a DJ and lots of post-race stuff. So even, watching the race followed by the checkered flag on Sky Sports on TSN is pretty entertaining.
Now, DRS, of course, is pretty impactful for one to change. But you sent me a picture of the track, and the DR detection for zone number two it's right in the baseball stadium, and then so this actually gets modified for the race. So what does that mean? And am I mistaken in thinking like that detection zone right in that tight turn, like that's not really going to be a place where they're going to be using it a bunch, are they?
No, they definitely don't use it there, but that's at that point where the detection zones are. If you're within 1 second of the car that's in front of you at that point, when you get to the DRS, then you can deploy your wings. So, the actual DRS zone is ahead on the straightaway. That's how it works.
Now, is it usually, though, two turns ahead of where you can actually use the DRS? Is that normal? Because it looks like it's between 15 and 14, but then you go all the way till 12 before you actually can kick it in on the straightaway. Is that normal?
Yeah, the other way, it'll go if the one DRS zone is between 14 and 15, and then it'll kick on when you get back onto the straightaway in sector one. But yeah, that's very common that the detection zone happens a quarter or two before, before the activation zone. So, the unique thing about Mexico, though, is at least in sector one, usually the activation zone happens fairly quickly on the front straightaway, but because that front straight is so long, they move the activation zone down the straightaway a little bit so that it's not so easy to overtake.
Tom Collins for the Cantor Race Report. Colin, shifting gears over to NASCAR. There always seems to be a debate between chase and not chase drivers and how they should approach. Is there a certain gentleman's agreement about if you're maybe not in the chase, you don't compete the same way, or should there be?
In my opinion, no. I mean, I think, I've made no secret of where I stand on this stuff. I think the formula is very flawed. And you can tell that it's flawed because the level of conversation is always the same. The chase drivers are always whining about how the non-chase drivers don't give them any respect. And the non-chase driver sits back and says, you know what, we're here to run a race. Our sponsors are paying us to be here, and it's our mission to try and win. So we're not really going to race you guys any differently. Last weekend, in Martinsville, it really started to work against some of the guys. I mean, a kid named John Hunter Nemechek, he's the son of Joe Nemechek, used to run, cup races. I'm not a big fan of John Hunter, even though he runs for our friends over at Kyle Busch Motorsports. John Hunter is a really aggressive driver. And he kind of, he stood out for me, a bunch of years ago at Canadian Tire Motorsports Park, got to the last corner, drilled a guy in the in the side of the truck, didn't really have a shot to win, but that was his only way to do it, was to wreck a guy. In the Martinsville race, he was, basically overtaking a non-contender. It was four position, a kid named Austin Wayne Smith. Just drilled him repeatedly in the back bumper. These weren't little taps that drivers will do on a short track to say, hey, just so you know, I'm here. You kind of get three knocks at the door, and if the guy doesn't get out of the way, then it's accepted to get a little bit more aggressive. But the second, he hammered this kid. When they got to the next corner, just flat turned him into the wall, ended his day, and basically said, you know what, you can't race me like I don't exist. These things are going to happen. This is part of the system where these guys who are in contention have a little bit more on the line. They expect a bit of courtesy, but they don't often give it. And, that's just in the trucks. And it went on like that through the Xfinity and the cup race. I mean, after the cup race, there was a lot of tempers. It was very entertaining to watch. But at the same time, it's like, NASCAR can fix this if they just change the system a little bit.
Colin, great stuff, man. We look forward to posting that video. Starting, I will retweet it so people can get a sense of it. It's pretty unique. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the weekend. Do you have a favorite? Does anybody's setup do you like better between Red Bull or Mercedes this weekend?
Red Bull, again, they have it, but the way Mercedes is talking, I think they're going to pull it off. And on the cup side, if anyone but Kyle Larson walks away with the championship, it will just absolutely show how messed up the system is, because there's, nobody's had a season even close to what Kyle Larson has. So, hopefully they can close out what's deservedly theirs.
We'll talk to you next Thursday. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot, guys.